Today we had the poignant experience of having Dr. Neil Klein on as a guest, and he used that word, so I'm sure you're going to hear more about that as you listen to this episode. But a bit about Neil before we get into it. He is an associate professor of psychology and has taught at Lesley University in Cambridge, Massachusetts for the past 45 years. He's teaching classes in cutting-edge psychology, counseling, holistic health, wellness, and cross-cultural psychology. He's the author of a new operating manual for being human, which that just the title alone, I'm like, I want to read that.
I know. Me too.
Yep. He's also the author of Me, Myself, and Mindfulness, The Arithmetic of Consciousness, which focuses on making basic psychological concepts and skills we teach in college age students palatable for younger children and parents, helping both feel more prepared as they grow and navigate this complex world. And there's much more we can say about him and his work, but just been incredible conversation. The hour went by. This is probably the quickest hour we've ever had gone by, for me at least.
Yeah, and we talked about a lot of a good range of topics too, like quantum physics, consciousness. And I really just love how Neil was able to ground in how simple it could be to connect to one spiritual side and balancing out like the left and right hemispheres of the brain, and that we need more of that. We need more play. We need more like consciousness and presence in our life. And so that was a great conversation.
Yeah, definitely. Especially that part. I love that part about like the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere, because you listening, I think you'd really resonate with that, because most people he was sharing, and I would tend to agree, is that most people are in their left hemisphere of their brain most of the time, just analytical, logical, very focused on just, you know, their present moment of reality, but just like analyzing it too much instead of just being. I think he made the distinction is like doing versus being. It's like when we're in the left hemisphere, we're focused on doing things, like always having to have like some action is something that we're doing, versus being is actually being present. So there was some insight into how to be more present and the power of that. So
how it takes no more time in the day. Like you can do it. You don't need any more time. And we trick ourselves in thinking we need more time to be more present, but it's like, you can be present in little tiny things, and you'll hear more about that in the episode.
Exactly. So dive in.
Welcome to the Science and Spirituality Podcast, where we dive deep into universal spiritual principles and ground them in modern science. My name is Chris Carton.
And my name is Kevin Carton, and we are committed to simplifying the spiritual side of success for you with easy-to-understand scientific research, so you can walk away with practical tools to create radical transformations in your life. Let's get started. All right. So welcome back to another episode of the Science and Spirituality Podcast. And we have an amazing guest, Dr. Neil Klein. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. I'm glad to be here too with you. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. And so much, I mean, again, given your experience, I think it was again, 45 years as a professor of psychology. So we've had, I think, one or two other psychologists on the podcast, but still every single time it's been a really fascinating conversation. So yeah, I'm looking forward to diving into different topics with you, but especially on the spiritual side of things, because especially like I personally want to start off with that. It's like one of the most recent articles you published, you had this, line that you had, it says the spiritual dimension of human experience. So tell us, I would love to hear your experience of that, because I know listeners of our podcast, some are just getting into spirituality or how that relates to our human experience, but love to hear your take on that.
Gladly. A couple of things, and if I'm going too long, please cut me off.
Will do.
The name of the article is called Our Call as a Species. And I think to some extent, that's one of the most important questions that all of us need to address, which is I believe in evolution, although could it be disproven one of these days? Who knows? Because almost everything else has. But I do think that species, going from there was a time on the planet, there were no little plants or no little flowers, and all of a sudden it existed. You know, we went from little one-cell creatures to complicated creatures. We're not the end of evolution. Although as humans, we like to think that all too often, and even the Bible and the Quran and the Torah, in the book of Genesis clearly says that. In black and white print, and we can go into that later if you want to. However, if we understand our call as a species and what we're doing and what we're not doing, it seems like there's a lot of human beings that don't know what to do with that question, don't even know if it's a fair question, and have not had an experience in life to begin to answer that question, not just cognitively or academically, but going, this is something I've lived. Can we talk on a lived level as opposed to an abstract level? Because I just think it's cleaner and clearer, and young kids can get it. We're on an abstract level, young kids can't get it. And it seems to me that simplicity is powerful, even though in this culture it seems to have a negative connotation more often than a positive connotation. So when I was an undergraduate, my math has always gotten me into trouble and always saved me at the same time. I was born in New York City, and you can take Du Bois out of New York, out of Brooklyn, but you just can't take that out of me. So I was in undergraduate school. I'm in school back in the day. Behaviorism was in vogue. I had to run rats and pigeons through mazes again and again and again. And I would always do my work, but then I'd say to the teachers, tell me about compassion with the pigeon. Okay, or I'll write a paper bringing stuff in that they're kind of like, you're in the wrong place. So the chairperson of the division did call me into his office numerous times and say, I think you want to be a religion major, or you're just in the wrong place. It's not where psychology goes. And I'm kind of like, in my lifetime as a professional psychologist, it's where psychology is going. And I've pretty much spent my entire career since undergraduate school kind of going, instead of starting with our connection with animals, with chimpanzees, with rats, with mice, with pigeons, with rats, can we not start with our connection with spirituality, with our largest sense of self? And whether we want to call that a soul or an inner essence or inner guidance, there's 100 other words that we can call that, depending on how far back we want to go historically and how many cultures we want to get into. But wouldn't it be great if psychology started there? And we know we're going in two directions. We know where we came from, and we can talk about that. We know where we're going these days. Don't we want to, in the field of psychology, look at where we're going and how to get people going there? And in my mind, that word can be spirituality. I try my best not to bring in the word religion, because I think that's confusing. And I think these days, when I was an undergraduate, we would use the word vibes. And back in the day, our parents would look at us and kind of go, what are you talking about? And the good news is, amen for quantum physics.
Yes.
Quantum physics is taking everything that the ancient wisdom people said and taking everything that young kids say and going, this is where science is heading. So for the first time ever, we have hands being held between science and spirituality in a way that's never been there before. And even when people try and minimalize spirituality, I know I can imagine both of you can, we can go, let's talk science,
right?
Let's have this conversation and just talk science and see if you can follow where science is going, and then we'll weasel in spirituality through the bathroom window. And what are you going to do with that conversation, which always is how I try and operate, whether I'm teaching a class, doing a podcast, speaking to friends, or whatever.
Yeah,
I like how you name dropped the podcast there, Science and Spirituality. Yeah. I think that's a
great title, quite honestly. Yeah, I mean, it's
like exactly one of the reasons that we wanted to start this podcast and why we called it that. Because I mean, me personally, like when I was going through acupuncture school, like I noticed how much they focused on the psyche of the person in healing, like almost just as much, if not more, than the actual physical body. And it just made so much sense to me. And you can tell that everyone in my class, it made a lot of sense to them too. And when you take a look at the Western medicine and how they're dealing with the body, it's so physical, and they're not even focusing on that mental aspect. And, you know, Kevin's a life coach, and, you know, he can literally see the changes in people's energy when he tells them about certain things and they have things that click in their heads. And it's like, that's really where like true healing has to take place. Like there needs to be a shift inside.
You bet. Couldn't agree more. The biggest dilemma, I think, is as a professor, is students come into classrooms wanting information. Mm. And it's like, and then you get your grade and it's kind of like, no, the goal is transformation.
Yes.
The amount of information you get in your head is really unimportant, even for a job or for a career or for life skills. The transformation piece is what's paramount. And students struggle with that, and some of them swallow it and some of them spit it back out again, and some of them keep on chewing it. But what you're saying is, we have a mind, and the world of psychology lived there forever. we have a body. And what's interesting, back in the days of Freud and Jung and Acetylene and others, they'd be, imagine being the first medical doctors. You have your career and you're going into your peers and going, you know what? We got to bring the mind in with the body.
Yeah.
And what bold souls. And I get they did lots of stuff wrong, but what a huge paradigm shift back in the day. And these days, I think what we're doing with quantum physics is, now let's bring in the vibrations. Is it a particle? Is it a wave? Let's bring that in. Let's bring in all that we know from that field, which is cutting edge science, and see what that effect is on psychology, on living together, on how we meet our needs. And it's mm-hmm. and we're getting there.
Yeah. Mm. I think for me, probably one of the biggest shifts that I had in my or transformations in my consciousness was when I learned about the electron double slit experiment. Yep. Where, and I'm sure you've heard of that one, and I don't know if we've ever talked about it specifically on the podcast before, but it basically suggested that, you know, human consciousness can affect the outcome of experiments. And yes. You know, once I saw and started to understand that, I was like, oh wow, like, you know, our brains are, or our minds are super powerful, and they can actually alter the way that we see reality and perceive it.
You bet. And I wish I couldn't agree more. I wish I had written down what I'm going to say right now, because it may get confusing. But the best I've read, and I don't even know who to give this credit to, because I've read it in different places, so it's generic. But the old map until recently was the bottom of the pyramid, as far as what's important, was physics. And after physics, you've got chemistry on top of that. And on top of that, you've got biology. And on top of that, you've got psychology. And on top of that, you've got consciousness. The new age map is the bottom rung is consciousness.
Mm.
And then you've got physics on top of that, biology on top of that, chemistry on top of that, biology on top of that, and psychology on top of that, which all of a sudden is saying, if there's not consciousness to be part of the equation, we're not looking at it scientifically.
Mm.
I mean, how
it's huge.
It is huge. It's the biggest paradigm shift I can think of in my lifetime. And it's bringing in consciousness with all the other natural sciences. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I get thrilled about it. And I see
right. it. So yes.
That's great. And students yep. can follow that.
Mm.
Given the right experiences and other stuff to read and discuss about that, which is, wow, my consciousness is more important than I had ever given it credit for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As a psychology professor who's, you know, studied and taught students for over 40 years, do you have a working definition you use of the word consciousness?
Funny story on that one, and it's worth telling. At Lesley, which is in Cambridge, Massachusetts, what an amazing place for a university. It's right next mm-hmm. to Harvard. But if you're looking for people that are seriously studying psychology and you're in Cambridge, Massachusetts, not only in our school, but the other schools and just psychologists in general, we have a large group of people that are psychiatrists, psychologists, medical doctors doing that. When I've got so many books in my brain. Give me one baby second. In Mindsight, the book by Daniel Siegel. If you've not read that book yet, he is brilliant. He's academically sound. He does all sorts of experiments. He runs stuff and he speaks so that normal people can understand what he's saying. He was coming in giving a speech and everyone from the school was there. Everyone from Cambridge was there. There was no room for students. Okay. And this is 10 years ago. And one of the things he says was to all of us, any of you in your studies, in your great studies, ever have the mind defined for you? And 10 years ago, not one of us raised our hand in all of our academic studies to ever have the mind defined for us. So his definition of the mind, which he did cross-culturally, and I like a lot, basically says it's sharing information and energy with the body and with relations in your world. And he gives definitions of that all over the place. And I love that definition. So beginning with defining the mind, which is the other tricky word in psychology, I think consciousness is the hardest one to define, only because most humans define consciousness as the contents of consciousness. So if I'm looking at you at the moment in time, my consciousness is you, okay? Mm-hmm. If I'm drinking something, my consciousness is what I'm drinking. If I'm having a discussion with someone, that's my consciousness. The dilemma tends to be, and most people that I study and that you've probably read also go, that's the contents of your consciousness. Now, if we bring in mindfulness and stuff like that, what we need to do is, in addition to being aware of the contents fully and completely, we need to have moments where we are not limiting our consciousness. And the way we can do that is by literally having frames of consciousness that go through our mind that are not full of do this, do this, do this, gotta, be there, be there, be there. What happened? We need to have frames of consciousness purposefully, intentionally, that are not filled up all day long and all night long with thoughts, feelings, sensations. We need to have frames of consciousness going through that are basically empty. Why? Because then your intuition or your body wisdom has a route to kind of go, knock, knock, here I am. Let me give you some information that you're never going to get by filling up your consciousness with the contents of it. And somehow that then leads into having a soulful moment or a mindful moment, but it's coming in through the other end, quite honestly, which is starting to find consciousness as we are not individual human beings. We are not waves on the ocean. We are all part of the entire ocean. And if for a moment in time, we're an individual wave, but if we're defining ourselves as an individual wave or identity, as opposed to the largest perspective of that, we're never going to understand who we are, how to heal ourselves, how to have peace on the planet. And that historically has been called the perennial philosophy, if people want to Google that. But I could probably bring out 50 books, if not 500 books, if not 5,000 books about people from different cultures and going way back in the past, and quantum physicists, all of whom will say that exact same concept, probably clearer than I just did. But I think consciousness is the largest possible opening of who we are as humans. And try saying that to most students, not for the first class, not for the second class, not for the third class, maybe for the end of a senior level class, because it's just almost hard for most human beings to grasp that and not think it's just woo-woo or some old guy that's lost his rockers.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like it's almost one of those things that you have to start like thinking on more. You gotta sit with it. And what with that? And it's not, it's like the more you think about it, the more you can probably get confused, because it's almost like you're trying to define, not yourself, but you're trying to define something that you're also present in. It's like you need to take a step back and start just sitting still and letting things come to you. Exactly. And experience it really versus trying to describe it with words. It's got to be experienced.
It's like, and the phrase is, what's the thinker? You're not the thinker. You're the observer. You're the witness of the thinker. If you can spend time doing that, and being the thinker allows us to make life how we need it to be to work. So there's nothing wrong with that, but it's half of the puzzle. The other half of the puzzle is going beyond analytical left hemisphere cognitive thinking to use other parts of our brain, if you want to get into that conversation, which is larger than that and can't be explained by words. But again, where we're going is tricky for many people to go to unless they begin watching their thinking. Or again, my wife started this with me a long time ago. We'd be walking and she'd go, look at that butterfly. Be quiet, Neil. Look at that grass. Be quiet, Neil. Look at that cloud. Be quiet, Neil. And what she was doing as we were just going for a walk is going, just quiet your little left hemisphere you like to live. And that serves you really well as a teacher, but go into your right hemisphere and allow information to be there that you don't have to try and analyze or outthink at all. But we are trained to think and outthink and rethink and reanalyze everything.
Heavily.
Important skills, but right. Out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
Out of balance.
Yeah.
Right. It makes me think of, I think it was, this quote was attributed, maybe it actually is, to Einstein, but that the mind is a servant, but then the intuition is the gift, but we've created a society that is like revered or put the servant on a pedestal or put it as a king, which... It's not what it's meant to be.
Einstein did say that. I'm going to misquote him, as are you, but the concept there.
Right.
So who cares? He wouldn't care. And basically he was saying, I'm not smarter than other quantum physicists or other physicists. What I've learned to do is just stop thinking about it. And the answer will come to me. Okay. And Pythagoras, when he was trying to figure out his equation, he was in a bathtub turning his mind off and the answer came to him. And the question becomes, how many examples are there really of people that we admire who didn't think better than we did, but were able to go thinking, stop, feeling, stop, let intuition be there. Because that's, if we look at our psychological functions, that's the secret function.
Mm, yeah.
And as a child growing up in the 1950s, I was told again and again, Neil, you don't have an intuition. It's a woman's intuition.
Ooh.
And it's kind of like, and I was told that again and again. And these days we kind of go, no, all humans have intuition. What we don't do in education anywhere is help people understand how to turn off cognitive mind and how to engage intuitive mind, even when we're just eating and chewing, or what, I mean, we can, it's not going to waste time because we can do that when we are living our life. So when people go, I don't have the time, it's like, it's not going to take any longer whatsoever. You can do that when you're doing tasks or chores anyway. So the time argument is a lack of understanding of what that really entails.
Yeah.
Can you speak more to that? Because that is a beautiful concept, because I was going to ask you, like, what are your ways to like quiet the mind, quiet the feelings? Like the most traditional I'm aware of is, you know, meditation, but can you tell us more about that in daily life?
You bet. And as all my students laugh at me, I'm severe ADHD who can do what I'm doing. And they're kind of like, how do you do this? And it's like, if there's a cat that runs in the room for a second, I'm going to stop teaching and play with the cat, but I'll be back in a moment.
Yes.
Okay. So learn that as all of you, it doesn't mean that you can't go back and forth and flip flop quickly and trying to go, what's wrong with me? I've lost my attention. It's like, no. For some of us, that's great. And historically, if we lived in tribes, we'd be the people staying awake late at night to make sure no one was coming to hurt the tribe. And we would be a very valuable member of the tribe, but we just have lost that indigenous need these days. But going back to your question, the thing I'm focusing on now for probably the rest of my career, and I'm 73, so will that be 75 or 80 or 85 or 90, who knows? It's a sweet career where you can't grow old, because it's just a matter of going, he's got more information and stuff he's done that all people can do are in the 30s and 40s. Amen. but for the rest of this time, what I'll be doing is calling one of two things, either calling normalizing mystical moments, because I think most people don't understand what a mystical moment is. And my dream's going to be, how can I make that the norm so that people go, I just had a mystical moment. And again, a mystical moment, people go, I don't see a burning bush. God's not spoken to me. But one of the videos that I've done that I'll chat with you about later is looking at a spectrum of mystical moments. And the first one is called a poignant moment. And a poignant moment is chatting with you both right now. It's a poignant moment. It is a sweet moment on the planet. The other day, I was going for a walk and heard the sound of birds and I couldn't see them, but just closing my eyes and listening to the sound was a poignant moment. The other day, I tried a different type of tea for the first time with a new type of honey. And as soon as I tasted it, the world was gone for moments when it's like, I just want to taste this taste and smell the smells. Those are poignant moments. And when people are looking at mystical moments, that's bottom rung mystical moments, which opens up the possibility of being mystical and having mystical moments to everyone, as opposed to people going, I've not seen a burning bush, but we've missed mystical moments. Okay. So that's going to be there. And in the next 4 to 6 months, the group that I work with will be going into TikTok, and we're going to be doing in TikTok, because that's going to be open stuff even more so. We're going to call it Modern Mystics in the Making. And it's a matter of going, everything over the TikTok is going to be this one little character that we call Once Beyond Time, which is a cross between Yoda and just another little creature, but he's the wisdom person, and he's going to be talking about, his name is OBT for Once Beyond Time, because back in the day, all stories began once beyond time, not once upon a time. I mean, it's that sweet way of beginning a story for kids, Once Beyond Time, which opens up realms of nonsensical, mystical, spiritual, beyond material to begin with, but we'll be doing that for a long time. And the other piece is going to be basically saying, and this little creature going, do you consider yourself a modern day mystic? Are you interested in watching some of these videos to see whether you are a modern day mystic and working on that skill base? But the whole dream is, how do people kind of go, I'm a mystic. And the data on that these days, 1 out of 2 people in this country, United States of America, say that they've had mystical experiences. I was shocked to hear that.
Okay. Wow.
And here's what gets even better. Then you enter the world of children. And one of my favorite books is The Secret Spiritual World of Children by Tobin Hart, PhD, a psychologist that I love. And when you look at children, it's amazing what we do as grownups to deaden their spiritual life early on, because we don't know what to make of it. But when you look at the number of people that are young that go, yes, I had a spiritual mystical experience or a sacred experience, and Mama Bear and Papa Bear talked me out of it, the numbers there are way higher. What an amazing place for research that hasn't happened yet. But that's what I'm gonna be doing with a bunch of my next couple of years, is focusing on that, which again, it's another word for spirituality. It's another word for how to get people to open the door a little bit to go, yes, I am a mystic, you know, and how to have families, instead of just at the end of the day, talk about how bad things went. Can we talk about, did you have a couple of poignant moments today? Can we just spend time being there together so that the psyche has a healthy moment or two or three or 15 or 30 every day? I haven't answered your question yet, so I'll either be quiet or answer your question about intuition if you want, whatever you want me to do there. I went off tangent. I know that.
That's okay. That was a great tangent. Yeah. I just wanted to say the Once Beyond Time is so much better than Once Upon a Time. Like it just felt so much better. Like when I heard that, I was like, wow, I don't know. This is weird.
Please spread it.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great way to start a story. Once Beyond Time, the mind, the cognitive mind doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. which is good. I think that's what was good about it, because it kind of like shocked me out of my head a little bit, and I had to, you know what I mean? Like it just completely just boom, right there. And I think that's also important too, when you're talking about the mystical moments and those small poignant moments. I think a lot of people don't, like if they actually walk through life super present, they will realize how many of those moments they actually have.
Exactly.
Like they probably have hundreds of them throughout the day, but we're so in your head all the time that you don't even realize you're having one.
Couldn't have said it better. And we look at all the stuff that's happening for health and happiness, that's not getting the primacy that it needs to get, because what's getting the primacy is taking more drugs, is doing this, is doing that. And it's like, you know what? We're missing what we need to do is easy to do than any of that. Won't take extra time. And it's exactly what you said, which is we have hundreds of these moments every day. We're just missing them. Mm-hmm. Silly rabbits us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, please, wherever you can, use that phrase. It's not my phrase. I read it somewhere. And again, as a psychologist, I read so much that sometimes it's hard to find where it is, and who cares as long as it's being shared.
Right.
I think you did answer Kevin's question.
In a way, I mean, in a different indirect way, because it's definitely, I could see like people listening to this can pull out. It's like, okay, yeah, those are ways I could be more in the moment, let the mind go, or the psyche, as you call it, is like the logical, analytical mind to just be more at ease. But yeah, if there's anything else you wanted to share that you know of, like ways to do that.
I'd like to chime in about intuition, and here's why. My training happened back in my late 20s. I had all sorts of training, including working with Carl Rogers and teaching with him a little bit back in the day. So that was great. Virginia Satir was the woman that developed family therapy, and I got to work and with her back in the day and train with her, amen. But my basic training was a 4-year training program in psychosynthesis. And everyone knows of Sigmund Freud, psychoanalysis. Some people know Carl Jung, analytical psychology. Every state back in the late 1800s and early 1900s in Europe had a medical doctor or group of them going, hey, bring in the mind, bring in the mind. Roberto Assagioli, as his name sounds, was from Italy. His work is called psychosynthesis. I had a 4-year training program. There were 12 of us, one weekend a month for 12 years. For 4 years, we all got together. We all had our individual sessions in front of the other 11 people with the two guides and therapists there. And we did cognitive training forever. So when people go, Neil, where's your work coming from? Both as a clinician and as a theoretician, it's coming from psychosynthesis. One of the groups that I'm still a part of is the Association for the Advancement of Psychosynthesis. I'm on the steering committee there. And the work that we do, I think, is shocking and great. But I do want to say that Carl Jung and Roberto Assagioli agreed on many things, where Sigmund Freud and the two of them disagreed on many things, including spirituality. And we can have a whole chat on Sigmund Freud's take on spirituality versus Roberto Astigioli and Carl Jung's take on spirituality and what happened there. But Carl Jung talks about four psychological functions, and a lot of people have taken the Myers-Briggs type indicator. So that's an easy way to say hello to that. And that would be sensing. No, think sensing and intuition are ways of getting information into the mind. And sensing is in this reality as it is. If you can't see it, hear it, taste it, smell it, or touch it, it's sensing, bringing information in. Intuition is basically, I've got to quiet my mind from seeing or and hearing and sensing and smelling and tasting and thinking and feeling. What's going to happen then? Intuition is going to be there from in my every moment I've ever had in my body and in my memory. All those experiences are stored. Not just what my mind is remembering, but all those moments are stored. And if you want to take it back, things have happened pre-birth and things have happened with our ancestors. So again, that conversation can go as deep as you want to get that. But Debo's talked about intuition has more wisdom in it because of the depth of it and what's happening than consciousness. And one silly thing on consciousness. When the phone people were coming up with phone numbers, they did research. And the research was, what's the normal person's likelihood of remembering names or numbers? And they came up with seven. So let me just do a quick silly thing. If I say out loud, 1276, you both have that, right? If I say out loud, 268249, you probably have that. If I go 617-283-093-647, that's more than seven bits of information. Most people kind of go, it's in short-term memory. I've got to leave my consciousness to now get something from short-term memory. Does that make sense so far? So the fact of going, if I can limit the amount of stuff coming in my consciousness for a frame of consciousness, I've got intuition ready to go, here I am. Please have time, please have space for me. All this has been recorded here. And then I can also work on that psychological function. And Roberto Astigioli has four of the same six ones. He goes sensing, thinking, feeling, and intuiting, but he brings in drives and he brings in the imagination. And I'm not going to talk about the difference there because I just want to talk about the fact that they both bring in sensing and intuition to get information into the brain as the two ways of getting information into the mind, into the brain. Most of us, I've never been to a gym, but I dance a whole bunch. So I work out and my weights are different followers that I'm leading all the time. And the movement is the movement all the time. I know you guys also, one or both of you have danced as well, but we'll get there at the end of this, maybe. Where was I going? Neil Klein, come back. I went to the dance world and it went into dance for a second.
I just wanted to make a comment about just that idea of intuition and the idea of that the seven bits of information and just our modern society, how much information we are currently processing all the time. Like I a couple of days ago, I started to do an experiment because I noticed that I've been spending a lot of time on Twitter and Instagram as like a unhealthy way for myself to relieve stress. And I was noticing like how that was not helping at all. And so I deleted Twitter and Instagram from my phone a couple of days ago. And so the last 2 days I've been super bored, but like bored in a way where it's like, I'm actually sitting with myself and I'm having, it's just a very weird experience. And I started to like think about that. And I did some research on our attention spans and on all that stuff. And our attention's being robbed like right now in our society. And from what it sounds like, if our attention's always on something outside of us, we're never going to be able to access our intuition ever unless we make a radical change or something. Yes.
It is a radical change. And that's a great example. And in the East, back in the day, they would spend a lot of time focusing on making that contact going. And the word meditation that came from there back in the day, whether it was walking meditation or sitting meditation, was how do I quiet what's going on in my mind so that I can begin to deepen that connection. And I know personally, I'm on fast forward all the time. So I'll do walking meditation more than sitting meditation. But if I'm focusing on the moment, I'm not having my mind go chatter, chatter, chatter. And the other cool thing about that is, I just want to put in one other thing. If you've ever seen the TED talk, God, there's so many thoughts in my little brain, about a woman who was a neuropsychologist, physicist, and she was trying to fix up the pieces of the brain to see what was going on. And she had a stroke, and I'll think of the title of that in a moment. My stroke of insight is that it's an 18-minute TED Talk, and the woman was a scientist, and she had a stroke. And the 18 minutes is her talking about how she had the stroke, and with the stroke, her left hemisphere was gone, and she was trying to use her right hemisphere to guide her so that she wouldn't die, but also was absolutely amazed what it was like living in her right hemisphere for a while, and it changed her life. And again, we think of our brain, the four physical structures of our brain, was we have a reptile brain, stay alive, stay alive, stay alive. We have a basic mammal brain. I've got family and friends and others. I'm going to have feelings that protect me and you. We've got our distinctly human brain. The left hemisphere is the world we live in, which is analytical, sequential. That's what it is. Look at the world we're living in. And our right hemisphere, which we hardly live in at all, is basically saying, I'm connected with everyone. Look how sweet this is, not having my analytical mind run my life. But for all of us, including myself, dealing with the boredom of it all, and then finding fun stuff to do to occupy my mind a little bit, so that I'm not just having the chatter become incessant. But in my backyard, we've got a bunch of trees, and I love listening to the leaves move in the wind. And when it rains, it's like the sound there can keep me out there for 20 minutes just going, my cognitive mind is quiet because I've got a sound to listen to, but it's nothing like my normal daily living. But I think that's what we all need to learn how to do. And for modern day mystics, that would be step one, which was learn how to understand the 100 poignant moments you have every day and milk them.
Yeah. I think going back to what you said before as well, I think it was before Kevin asked this question too about, people thinking they don't have time in the day to do that, but it doesn't take any extra time is what you said. And I think that's so true, because I think what people don't realize until they've had the experience of doing it is that taking those 20 minutes to listen to the rain is probably going to be way more beneficial than you mulling over your same stressors and problems, because sometimes you can't find the solution if you don't get any different facts or any different information. And so we think that thinking it over and over and over again is going to get us to the right answer. But sometimes we just need to take a step back and get some new information. And so doing something like you said, that's a great way to access some new ideas.
And it could be when I'm taking a shower, just feel the water. When I'm eating, just taste my food. When I'm walking up the stairs, just walk. When I'm brushing my teeth, just brush. I mean, it could even be stuff that I'm doing every day 100 times. Can I work that into my poignant moments? In which case, there's no extra time whatsoever. Taking something that was normal is on automatic. Instead of doing it on automatic, do it with conscious attention that this is what I'm doing. And it sets a small amount of attention that intuition has a door to come in.
It just made me think of gratitude.
Just one other baby thing before we get to gratitude.
Go.
The image I use in class all the time that the students get, and whenever students get something, I love it. I go, how many of you have gone to a gym and worked out? And almost everyone raised their hand. I go, now tell me, would you ever consider for 2 years just working out the left side of your body? No, that would be stupid. It's like, okay, now tell me, if you're just working out the left hemisphere of your brain and not working out the right hemisphere of your brain, is that any less stupid than working out your left arm and leg, but not your right arm and leg? Or is it an equal amount of imbalance, but you're just missing the silliness, the stupidity, the limitation of what we're all doing as our norm? That tends to shock them also, because they've all been working out and they've never considered. And then they start talking about the guys that do the upper part of their body, but not their legs.
Yeah.
And they all start laughing about that. And it's kind of like, that's the same thing. It's like, you've got four psychological functions, at least if not six. Wouldn't it be great to balance them and not to just omit one or two of them?
It's almost like if we work out the left hemisphere so much that it rationalizes not working out the right hemisphere, and we don't even realize it. It's like telling you, like, you don't need to do that. You're fine.
And that's the exact perfect wording, really. It does rationalize us out of doing anything but that. And then when we look at who am I, the answer is, well, you're not the leader of your own orchestra. Your left hemisphere is who you think you are. But going back to consciousness, that's not who you are.
That just hit me in a way that I've never, I don't know. I just, those comments. Yeah. Cause that makes so much sense. Like, I feel like that's me a lot too. Cause I think as humans, we're such good rationalizers. Like, anything that's going on, like, you're going to rationalize it to make it feel okay to your nervous system. And if you do that enough times, you're going to start thinking that's you. Yeah.
It's one of the skills of the left hemisphere to try and calm the nervous system. So all your words are exactly right on, but we're being duped. I had a client years ago, 40 years ago, 80-year-old medical doctor. And he came to see me. I'm going, wow, medical doctor, 80, what happened here? Had a family, had children, had a job. He came to see me because he still realized he didn't have the love of his father ever growing up, and his father was dead. And I'm thinking, here's a man who is very successful in many ways and still being haunted as an 80-year-old of not getting the love of his father. Okay, so when I told that story in class, one of the students said, I get this now, Neil, it finally makes sense. It's like, well, tell me what you get, please. And he said, I don't get the love of my father either, but here's what I need to learn how to do. I got a lot of skills from my father, how to do this, how to do that. It was almost as if my father was a hardware store, and he gave me all the tools that I'd get in a hardware store. And I was looking for apples and fruits and kindness, and it's not who he was. And so is this 80-year-old doctor looking for something from his father that he would never get from his father, and never, no one ever worked with him, kind of going, you could be duped your entire life because what you're looking for, you're never going to get there because it's not what that store is all about. Mm. The same concept there, but it's being said differently.
Mm. Yeah.
We need to broaden our horizons. Yeah, this is amazing.
Yeah.
We have to broaden our horizons of where we shop.
And in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you would get produce in hardware stores. Chris, weird is funky and weird. Same thing in Colorado. Some places, some probably in Asheville, North Carolina also, but I don't know where you are in North Carolina.
Yeah, we've been to Asheville a few times. It's a weird place. in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. But I wanted to make another point too, because at least what came to my mind, Neil, after you shared previous to that example about like the left hemisphere, right hemisphere, and how they were often not working out one of them, but about being more present so that we can allow intuition to speak to us, it just dawned on me in how gratitude, because I mentioned that word, it connects. Like, I didn't realize that until now, and how that connects to opening up to intuition. Because when you're grateful, it's really most often it's easier to be grateful for the things that you have or the things that you're experiencing now in this present moment. So like, it can help. I see that as like a tool to be present. It's like, I'm grateful for this tea. I'm grateful for this clean water that I get to shower in. I'm grateful for the habit of brushing my teeth so that I could, you know, have good dental health, any of that stuff. It's just gratitude.
Probably the simplest and most powerful way to begin a sentence if you're trying to experience the poignant moment or the realness of it all.
Mm.
And even once again, how simple is that? So it's not a matter of complexity. It's a matter of people going, that's going to do it. It's like, would you try it for 3 months?
Right.
Try it for 3 months and then let's have this conversation. And if you want to try it and have a group of chat once a week for 3 months, we'll get a group of people to chat with you. That's not a problem.
Mm.
But that word is so potent. It's so, it sets a sweet hello. It's that's a sweet inroad to everything we're talking about.
Definitely.
I feel like the word simplicity has come up a lot on this podcast. And I feel like, Kev, even the stuff that we've spoke about before in many of our episodes and a lot of our other guests, like everyone, like everything is, it seems simple to do, right? It's like, it's simple things. And you think that's part of the reason, well, I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people don't do it, because they think, oh, it's too simple. It's not going to work. It's like probably the left hemisphere again, being like, no, exactly. It's not complicated enough. Like it doesn't make, nuts and make sense. But then, and I also like, is that part of the reason too, that a lot of our larger institutions have had such a hard time accepting a lot of this stuff, because it's almost like they don't want to come off their high academic horse to be like, there's no way that something that simple could work. Like it has to be more complex than that.
You bet. It would, if this ever became the norm for majority of people, it would take Christianity and religion. It would take political parties. It would take, this is my country and that's not my country. This is my town and that's not my town. This is who I am. You're not who I am. It would take capitalism. It would all fall apart. So the people in power, I mean, as we all know, the easiest way to control people is through fear, have them be scared and not knowing what's going on. What this is suggesting is there are simple ways not to get your information externally, but to get your information internally from your inner wisdom or self, which is then impossible to be talked out of because it's not just a cognitive concept, it's a lived experience. And if you're trying to rule a group of people, that's the last thing you want to have happen, isn't it? Although if you want to have a group of people like happened in Tibet, China for thousands of years, that's exactly what you want to do, which is go inside and get the depth of who you are. And also in some indigenous countries as well, that's the way that things are. As a cross-cultural psychologist, we've taken students all over the place and done stuff that had been dangerous and we probably shouldn't have done, but the experience was life-changing and amazing. And the fact living a very raw life for 2 weeks and what we did, people then, you need to use your intuition. If you're living in a place that's more natural, that's more raw, where you don't know exactly what's happening every moment, all of a sudden your intuition becomes a valuable piece of what's going on. And having time to play with children or just chill instead of being boring becomes laughing and a normal part of life.
Yeah. Yeah, Kev, you, I think one thing that Kevin's helped me with a lot in turn, like, you know, he's a life coach and, but just as my brother, like Kevin will remind me all the time that like to just have fun, like how important fun is to the spirit. Like, and I feel like I'm a person that tends to forget that sometimes. Like I will literally, and Julie can back me up on this too. Like I'll literally sometimes not, I'll be like, I don't want to play video games because I feel like that's a waste of time. Like I'll say things like that, but like, I know it'll be fun, but there's a part of me that's like, it's not being productive.
Yeah. I understand that perfectly, because I could be out doing nonstop, and I've learned as time goes on that I'm more efficient if I have time that I'm playing than if I'm just doing all the time, because my mind gets stuck in places. And when I was in therapy for 4 years, at the end of that, I realized what they were doing to me, were with me or for me. And I think what they were doing is taking my striving self that was so competent and loved as a young child and a kid in school and all that stuff, and basically saying, the balance point meal of all your striving is you playing more. Which allowed me back in the day, because my dad was a sweet man, but he would always reinforce me when I had all A's and plus going, what's the B plus? And when that happens, something like that 1,000 or 10,000 times, inside him is kind of like, just stop it. But how could I have said that to my dad? He wouldn't have been able to be there. But when I was in therapy and learned to play more, I would go home and think that what my dad was saying was silly, as opposed to it having such an effect on me that it was literally shaking up my entire innards. And they were working, going, Neil, if you're going to have a very intense striving self, you need an equally balanced, playful self that needs its own time, which makes life more fun.
So balancing the left and the right.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing your example and your story with that too, because I'm very similar as well. Like, and that's, I think, why I share that message with you so much, Chris, because I'm working on that myself, to play more, to have more fun, to not always feel like I have to work or develop or evolve. It's like, well, actually part of playing is evolving as a human being. It's allowing our mind to just be at ease so that we can be more connected.
And we're in a world where left hemisphere is do, right hemisphere is B. So again, the question is, how are you doing? How are you doing today? And again, what people don't like from me is, how have you been today? What qualities have you been able to express today and live in today? Again, that's asking people to go to the right hemisphere.
Yeah.
You know, and being this balances doing this. That's Winnie the Pooh, by the way, if you're wondering where that very important concept is coming from.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
The little book, The Tao of the Pooh, will always be one of my favorite books.
Nice.
Basically saying Winnie the Pooh was all about Taoism and letting kids realize Taoist philosophy without them ever knowing what they were getting into.
Beautiful. I love that. It's the Trojan horse for kids.
Exactly.
I feel like, I feel like kids just have like that inner knowing for a lot of this stuff though, as well. Like they just like, when you ever watch a kid, they're just playing, like they're just, or if they like fall down and scrape their knee, they'll cry for a bit though, but then they'll just get up and keep going. And so they don't dwell on stuff. They're just so in the moment. And I think we can learn a lot from kids.
And again, I know I tell stories and I apologize because you both are amazing anyway, but it's what it is at the moment. we took a bunch of students deep in the Amazon, and there was a group of men, a group of women, some older people, some younger people. When we were in with really raw tribes, you would find a little child being put on a table with needles and baubles, because they were trying to make stuff to sell to the people that came in to visit them. And all the women in our group would kind of go, you can't leave a baby on the table. You can't have a needle with the baby on the table. What are you doing? And with interpreters, the mama bears to the kids that was there, a kid said, we don't want to scare our child. If they fall once, they'll learn where to sit on the table. If they poke themselves once with the needle, they will learn what a needle does. And then when we got back in the country later, I had one student come to class, and I always say to students coming to class, if you've got a young child on any given day, you can't get babysitters, please bring the child to class, because we'll be able to say, focus on what we're doing. So there's probably a five-year-old child, and the child was on a chair, and the chair fell over, and the child went on the carpet. Before anyone looked and saw what the child was going to do, we're like, oh my God. And I said, all of you, freeze, just stop now. You didn't give the child a chance to have a normal child response and see what the child was going to do. You just taught the child when they fall to go, Do me a favor in the future, see what the child does first. Just quiet yourselves, because you're teaching them how to be based on how you learn to be. Let's see what their normative being is, and every child's going to do it differently. But just take a minute and breathe. And they were like, wow, I didn't get that until the example just happened. And it's like, everyone. And the child started laughing.
Nice. Guess,
oh, it's like, this was wrong. It's like, see? But you're teaching the child what the child doesn't need to be taught at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah.
It's incredible.
And the child's still alive and doing fine.
Yes. That's awesome.
Can I just add on one or two other things, just because I don't know what your time is? I've got.
Sure.
Okay. Two things I just would like to highlight. I'm going to be spending a lot of time on our call as a species, because I think that's basically going, we need to look at us being spiritual, mystical beings as much as we need to look at ourselves as being material beings. And again, quantum physics says, if you're going from a wave to a particle, it's not either or, it's depending on what's being observed, and they can go back and forth and back and forth, and energy never changes. So it's not a matter of material is good and spiritual is bad, it's a matter of spiritual is material, material is spiritual. And going back to the new map, what's the difference? Humans' consciousness is what makes it material or spiritual, which makes it a particle or makes it a wave. You get what I'm saying, but most people on the planet, the book I bought for that for classes are my first book of quantum physics written for eight-year-olds. So I can use that in a psych class, and still it's hard to explain for people, but at least they get some sense of, is the cat going to live or die? And you know what I'm talking about?
Schrodinger's cat. Yeah.
You know, depend what happens when it opens. So I think that's cool. And I love that article. And the other one is, I've been doing, again, I'm as technologically silly as any, I would match a three-year-old or four-year-old for technological expertise. However, I've got lots of friends and I've got lots of stuff I want to do still. And I'm fine being technologically naive as long as I can say what I want to say and do what I want to do with friends. So having a website and having transcending times is my as the website and all the videos is totally cool. But that is focusing on reimagining life beyond A to Z. And once again, every class I teach, there's a video there. So intro counseling, the beginning video is, can we learn to talk better? With young kids, we go into use your words. I don't know about you, but I think most grown-ups do a terrible job of using their words. And with texting and grunting and groaning and rolling one's eyes, we do an awful job of using one's words. And I could make a good story about most relationships break up because grown-ups don't know how to use their words. They've never learned how to use their words. And sometimes after age 6 or 10, try telling a grown-up to use your words and see what a snotty response you get back. But for intro counseling, it says grown-ups need to learn how to listen better and use their words better. We can all run, but if I want to become a professional runner, I've got to train. We can all listen and we can all talk, but if I want to become a human being that can use their words well and listen well and create a future generation of kids that can listen well and speak well, it's not what I learned growing up in middle school playing sports with other boys or other girls. That's not the model. But every class I teach has a video, and I think that that's kind of a cool way of doing that, and that's called transcending times. Not the word transcending, but ending a trance. So trans-ending times. Nice. And those are kind of fun too, if people are bored later night. Everyone that watches them, it's late at night. It's never when daylight's happening. You know, I'll wake up in the morning and go, oh, it's been a pretty active morning, you know, dark time, because people have been watching this. But just wanted to put that out there as well.
Yeah. Excellent. We'll put the links to your website and your YouTube in the show notes, because I've watched a bunch of your videos on your YouTube, and they're really good. I really enjoyed talking to you today, Neil. And meeting you too.
Great. I hope that our relationship, I said this to Julie, I said, as her life goes on, please don't lose contact. I feel the same way about both of you, that who knows how our cross will pass, but I know personally if there's anything I can do to help move you guys in a direction, and I don't know what that is yet, because I hardly know you, I would give it my best effort, and I do my best effort for lots of stuff, because as Yoda said, don't try, do.
We didn't get the chance to talk about your love of Star Wars, because Kevin and I are huge Star Wars fans too.
Love Star Wars, yeah.
there is a force, and we all know when we're using the force for right or wrong.
Yes.
And we all know when we're trying and when we're doing. We know all that stuff. At the end of every class, I go, bold and kind Jedi Knights, see you next time. And Julie said, you need to say that whenever you're done chatting ever. It's like, I always do.
Yeah.
Nice. I love it.
Let's love both your ways.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you,
Neil. It's awesome talking with you.
And that's it for today. So thanks for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. So any questions, any comments, connect with us on Instagram personally at Kevin F. Carton
or at Chris J. Carton, or our podcast or Instagram page at Science and Spirituality Podcast. And if you feel guided to, the one thing that we do ask is for you to please rate the podcast and also leave a review. This way we can reach more people, and in that way impact more lives. So with that, we'll see you on the next episode.